Twitter handle at @artist_first. And as always, don't forget to send your questions and concerns during the live broadcast to dj@artistfirst.com. And now here is your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. Tonight, we have a special guest. She is a publisher and a New York Times bestselling author. Welcome to the show, Wahida Clark. Good evening. How are you, Wahida?
I'm fantastic, Maxine. Dr. Maxine Thompson, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I understand that you're in, are you in Memphis or are you in Mississippi yet?
We left Memphis this morning. I'm right now in Jackson, Mississippi, preparing for my tomorrow's full-day book club schedule, breakfast with books at the Subway restaurant in Brandon, Mississippi at 9:30. Then from 1:30 to 3:30, a meet and greet at Medgard Evers Library on Medgard Evers Boulevard in Mississippi. And then from 4 to 7, I have a book signing at Books A Million Bookstore on I-55 North.
Wow, that is great.
Compliments and hosted by Cyrus Webb of Conversations Book Club. So we did this last year with Justify My Thug, so we're excited to be back in Mississippi again.
Good. Well, the book, what week was it out when it hit the New York Times, the Payback?
Last week, the first week. So it was in the New York Times list for May 13th.
Okay, great. And the book just was released, so that is wonderful. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Wahida.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm Wahida Clark, the official queen of street literature. I'm a publisher. Everybody knows I'm an author. Payback Ain't Enough is book number 11. I write under Cash Money Content. And I have the two series, the Thug series and the Payback series, which both are doing very well. And I have a lot of good readers who, that's who I write for, my readers.
Well, how did you start writing? You know, give your whole background, what started you to writing.
Okay, I was in a federal prison when I first started writing. I was serving a 10-and-a-half-year prison sentence. I was like in my second year of the prison sentence when, you know, the reality hit me that I had to do something, take care of my two daughters. My husband, he was incarcerated, and it cost money to live in a federal prison. And plus, I needed to set up something for when I stepped out of the prison walls. So I was working in the law library, and one morning I was thumbing through some magazines, and I saw a small sidebar, and it had a picture of a brother, and it said that he was in prison. And he had written a book called Be More Careful, and his name was Shannon Holmes. So I saw that, and I said, wow, he's in prison. He wrote a book, and here I am sitting in the library, and I'm looking at all the books around me on the bookshelves, and I start visualizing my name on the spine of the book, on all the books, actually, Wahida Clark. And so I had my light bulb moment. I said, I'm going to write a book. It's legal, something I can do now, and it's something that has that residual income.
Yeah, that was a really nice aha moment, as Oprah calls.
Yes, it was. And
what
I haven't
year was
looked
that?
Back since. I think I first started writing in 2001 or 2.
Okay.
Yep.
And when did you get released?
December of 2007. I served 9.5 years of that 10-and-a-half-year sentence.
Wow, And you're talking about a tale of redemption. That is really wonderful. Because have you launched your career, you've launched a lot of other writers that you've helped, you know, come up. I know one of the writers, I'm the agent for the book Sparkle, is coming out at the end of the month, which I'm happy.
Yes, a young adult now. That'll be Wahida Clark Presents Young Adult's fourth YA novel. So we are excited for Sparkle, a.k.a. Sheila Gost.
Yeah, so yep. This is going to be great. And you just started doing the young adult in the last year.
Right.
Is that correct?
Exactly. I think last 2 years, maybe. We have four titles. Sparkle is number four, Sade's Secret. The first one was Under Pressure by Rashawn Hughes. Then we had The Boy Is Mine by Charmaine White. She's a college student at Spelman, young lad. I think she just turned 18, actually. And then we have Gloria, 99 Problems by Gloria Dotson Lewis. So those are our young adult titles, and they're doing pretty good. And Sparkle, we're excited about that because Books a Million, and they've already been pre-ordered their copy. So we're excited for Sparkle. Plus, you know, she's not new to writing. She understands the business. She not only does she write, but she promotes herself. You know, she's constantly posting things, and you know, she's not the kind of author that just sits there and expects for the book to move itself, because it doesn't work like that in this business.
Right. Have you found that to be a problem as a publisher yourself?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially with my work ethic, you know. When I was on behind the wall, I was sending flyers out and, you know, writing everybody, promoting my books. Even though I was in the prison, I still sold a lot of books behind the wall. You can't just write the book and just sit back and think it's just going to take wings and take flight and fly off the bookshelves. It's a constant hustle and grind.
Yes. Well, in your case, okay, let's go back to 2007. When you got out, how many books did you have?
I had seven books published while I was behind the wall.
What?
Written and published, right.
Well, what were those titles?
Thugs and the Women Who Love Them, Every Thug Needs a Lady, Thug Matrimony, Payback is a Mother, Sleeping with the Enemy, What's Really Hood. Okay, that's six. I have six books.
And who formatted your books, and who typeset them and edited and did your covers while you were locked up?
Well, I had contracts. I had contracts with major publishing houses. My first contract was with Black Print Publishing, but they went out of business. And then I got my first major contract with Kensington, and then I got a contract. Then my editor left Kensington and went with Grand Central Publishing, so I went with her, Karen Thomas. She's awesome. With Hachette, and so I had two. I had two major publishing contracts while behind the wall.
And then, when did you get with Cash Money Content?
Was it 2 years ago? I think this is the second year, because Justify Myself was the first one, and this is the second one. So at least about 2 years ago.
Well, that has been, and when you made that decision, you know, I watched something online where you were talking about it. What made you decide to go with Cash Money Content?
Well, when my agent reached out to me and said that they had that Cash Money was starting a publishing company, I wasn't sure who he was talking about at first. I was Cash Money, so he said, yeah. So I said, Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj and Drake and Juvenile, that Cash Money? You know, those are artists on their label. So he said, yeah. I said, wow, they're going to be doing books. But then that's how I hung up the phone and I thought about it. I said, wow, these brothers here, they sell millions of CDs. And their audience is my target audience. I need to be selling millions of books. And what better way to directly have a direct line to my target audience? So it was after I thought about it, it became a no-brainer.
Yes, I think that is good marketing, the cross marketing, and the edginess of using the hip hop community, since a lot of them
absolutely
do like to read.
Absolutely.
Well,
and they spend money, believe it or not.
Well,
so you
good
need people to spend money to buy the books.
Has the recession, which they say is over or almost over,
I hope so.
Has it affected your book sales? Did you see any impact, or with e-books, have you noticed a difference in your book sales with that?
Well, my agent tells me, Wahida, your numbers are, they go up every time I have a book comes, every time I have a new release, my sales go up higher. And, you know, plus, you know, I have a wonderful backlist. You know, my Thug series, it just keeps selling and selling and selling as if it's a new book. You know, we get new readers every day. You get new readers every day. And that's why I like going out and doing the book signings, because not only do I get to meet my regular readers, but, you know, I get a chance to snatch up some new readers, because once they get started on one book, they're like, oh, gosh, I got to get the next one. And then the next one, and the next one. So that's why I always like getting out and going out hustling and getting new readers. That's what it's all about to me.
Well, I admire that, because a lot of the writers, they put their books out, and then they go sit back down, and you haven't stopped, and you're a New York Times bestselling author. You're still doing book signings and moving your books. What are some of the other places you'll be going since the book is still new?
Okay, well, we just left Atlanta, we just left Memphis, we did Philly, okay, now we're in Jackson, Mississippi. I go to Houston, Texas for the, I think they have it called a Black Book Festival, and I'll probably be in Atlanta for the Bronner Brothers Hair Show, back to Atlanta, and I think, and then, you know, regular stuff in New Jersey. There's a bookstore in New Jersey, downtown New Jersey, Trenton, where I'm from. Classics Bookstore, and then they have this market that they do every Wednesday and Thursday. So, and then when I run out of places to go, I'll head to a flea market, because wherever there's people, lots of people, I sell books.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I like picking up those new readers.
Well, that's good, and I see that you're on Twitter and Facebook. Please give out your Twitter handle and some of your other, and your website, too.
Sure. Twitter, of course, is at Wahida Clark. Facebook, my regular Facebook page, Wahida Clark, you know, I have 5,000 followers, so I can't get any more, but I have the fan page, Wahida Clark's Real Reader, so please like me on there. And then I have Wahida Clark Presents Publishing. Then I have the Yaya Publications fan page, and the website is wclarkpublishing.com. And then my daughter, Nuance Art, she has her Twitter and Facebook page. She does my graphic designing, and behind the scenes she keeps everybody up with my events and the tour footage and the interviews. She posts and tweets all that good old stuff.
Okay, we're good. And your daughter does your covers? Did I?
She does book covers. She does my flyers. She helps with the website design. She does the covers for the publishing company. You know, she's like my creative consultant.
That's great. And I see that she has feedback on a lot of your books. Let's talk about your storylines. Now, you know, that's really what I love the most. How do you come up with your storylines? Did you hear these stories in prison? Did you meet these people? Are these people alive? Because I don't want to run into
it. I knew you were coming with that. Well, the Payback series, okay, I'll talk about that one first, because since you mentioned prison, that was born in the prison. I was in the hole when I started the Payback series in Lexington, Kentucky, in the hole, which was a county jail for the federal system. So many different women was coming through there, and they were so colorful, and their stories were so colorful and compelling that I had to write about them. So that's where the Payback series was born, in the county jail. Well, Payback is a mother. I was in a hole. And then, of course, the follow-up to that was Payback with Your Life. And then the new one that just came out last week is Payback Ain't Enough. The Thug series, I grabbed that from my upbringings and my three best friends. So that's where that was born. And then, of course, with writing a series, you know, you just continue on. You can just spin off with the characters or the couples. You basically have creative control. I can just do me. So that's how that works.
Okay. Well, how about
And then my story, What's Really Hood, that was the first anthology that I had edited and put together. What's Really Hood, a lot of people sleep on that, but that's five short stories by five awesome writers. That book is out of sight. And my story in What's Really Hood starts the book The Golden Hustler. So What's Really Hood, that short story I turned into a full-blown story in a book called The Golden Hustler. And in The Golden Hustler, I have some of my thug characters pay a visit in The Golden Hustler.
Well, I heard you on another interview, and you talked about the love element in your stories. I think when we think of the early Donald Goins and Iceberg Slim, you know, the street life seemed just so dark and bleak. But your characters have a lot of love, a lot of laughter. Now, they live on the opposite side of the law. But how do you make their characters be balanced where you don't see them as villains?
Well, you answered your own question, putting that love factor in and show them that individuals that do live on the other side of the law, you know, they have relationships, they love, they want to provide for their family, they want to have fun and enjoy life. So I just put that element in my storylines. And it just so happens that the element is so strong that it just knocks my readers out. You're like, oh my gosh, I need a Trey in my life. That's one of the main characters, Trey Macklin. And the brothers be like, where's Tasha and Angel? I need those kind of women. I just make sure the men are very strong as well as the women. And when they love hard.
Well, what is it about Tasha and Trey that everyone is still fussing about, and they want them on payback ain't enough? I noticed some of the reviewers refer back to Tasha and Trey.
Tasha and Trey is not characters in the payback series. It's just that I put a sneak peek to my thugs part six in the back of payback. And you know, the thug series is one of my, you know, that's my most popular works. And it has a lot of readers. This series has sold hundreds of thousands of books. So, you know, I have people that love those characters. And in the beginning, everything was all lovey-dovey, rosy-dovey with Trey and Tasha. But then towards the end of the fourth and fifth part of the series, they start getting lots of drama. And so now the... the readers are like, what are you doing? That is my favorite couple. How are you going to mess up the most happiest couple in the world? So that's where all that drama is coming from. And then I added a new villain in there that has shaken things up. And now I have the readers divided. I have the team Macklin. Trey's last name is Macklin. Then the villain's last name is Santos. So I have team Santos and team Macklin. So it's just spiraling out of control, Maxine.
When you sit down to write, do you write by pen or do you use a computer? How do you write your stories?
And Justify Myself, I actually use the computer, but all the other books are pen and paper. That's just habit from, you know, being in prison, because in prison I didn't have a laptop or anything like that. So I hand wrote it and sent the pages home to type. Now that I'm home, I handwrite it and then just type it up myself.
Did you handwrite Payback Ain't Enough?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Let's talk about your character, Dark, because, you know, I see him as an anti-hero, but yet there's something about him that's so disturbing that he stays on my mind. I keep thinking about him. Oh, that's just awful. But yet he's so memorable. How do you create such memorable characters?
That's, you know what, I don't even know how to answer that. Usually once I start writing, the characters, they take on a life of their own, and I just go where they tell me to go. That's all I can say about that.
You do a great job with that.
Wow.
I just love
why does
you...
Why does Dark stay on your mind?
Because he just saw, I mean, just some of the crimes he did were just heinous. They were just horrific. We hate to think that there are people walking around, I guess you can call them sociopaths, not psychopaths, but sociopaths, that they look normal, they act normal, but they don't have a conscience. I mean, there's no physical, you know, disability. It's a mental kind of thing. And that's what I say. He was such a character. It reminds me of all the different serial killer movies and novels they have now, where the serial killer is the lead character. And I said his role was so strong and powerful. I could see him almost coming back, because you can't tell. I wasn't sure if he. Well, I don't want. That's a spoiler, so I don't want to give that away. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you think he'll be coming back?
Probably so. But usually my readers, they'll tell me which route to take. So far they're not really saying too much about Dart. Actually, they're just everybody's mouth is still hanging open. Their tongue is hanging on the ground at Shan at the ending.
Yes, the
that's
Shan.
That's what everyone is talking about.
Yeah, because Shan was such a goody two shoe. I even mentioned it to you. I said that Shan just got book. Wow, what happened to Shan? Yes, she was
did.
A good girl.
She did a total 360. I like to think that it was, I don't know, it was something mental with the pregnancy. And, you know, we have a lot of mental issues in our communities, which you don't like to discuss. But Shan, yeah, she just lost it.
But, you know, I look at that she lost her brother. She lost her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had a lot of losses.
She didn't have no family, right. Right. Yeah, she was just carrying, like she said, she had been living for everyone else all her life, and then she ended up losing everybody. So what was she to do?
Yeah, well, she definitely just got crazy. What have some of your readers said to you about Shan?
That's what they said. They said, oh, my gosh, Shan is just, they say she's off the chain. What happened to her? They didn't understand. And some are cheering her on. Some are glad she did turned out the way she did. You know, I get different feedback.
And, you know, it tickles me how the readers are just putting so many reviews up on Amazon. They just, and even on Black Expressions, you're number one on there.
Oh, I got to get to Black Expressions. I'm glad you reminded me. So I got a bunch of reviews up on there?
I think so. The last time I checked on that one, they were beginning to pile up there, but I think you had 65 on Amazon. And to me, that's a lot, because a lot of people, they read books, but they don't like to review them. But your readers really like to discuss your characters and take them apart.
They do.
And when they get mad, if they say something bad, it's generally because they're mad at what the characters did.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with the
book. Absolutely. And that's why I love my readers, because they keep it 100. They don't hold their tongue. And I like that. I like that. Yep.
And then Justify My Thug, I see you have over 200 reviews on that.
Right.
One.
Yep. Yep.
Was that your first New York Times bestseller?
No, Payback, What Your Life Was, and then Justify, and then Payback Ain't Enough.
Okay, so you've been on it 3 times. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How
That's
about USA
blessing.
Today?
Yep, on that one, too.
Oh,
Justify
great.
Hit that one. Payback Ain't Enough. And some older books. I haven't had a chance, because I remember when I came home, I had the lady from USA Today. She had emailed me. And that's how we was able to pull up the old stuff with all hit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me see if we have any emails. Do we have any emails Corey?
Yeah, we have one here. It's from Max in L.A., and it says, if it wasn't for prison, would you be a writer today?
That is a very good question. If it wasn't for prison, no, I would not be a writer. That's why that 9.5 years that I did, when I first got the sentence, when the judge said your sentence is 125 months, which is 10.5 years, I was like, oh, my gosh. Oh, woe is me. Why me? But as the time went on, I said, wow, I wouldn't, even today, I would not change not 1 second. Because if I changed 1 second, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys right now. So, no, I didn't know I could write. That wasn't even a thought of me writing a fiction novel. I didn't even read the kind of the books that I write. When I was a young girl, I did, teenager. But, as I got older, I was always reading business books, self-help books, religious books. No, I would not have been a writer. So that's a very good question.
All right. And if we have any more, I'll let you guys know. Okay?
Okay. Just jump right in, Corey.
All right. Thanks, Maxine.
Okay, thank you. Well, I want you to tell us about your current novel. How did you come up with the concept for Payback Ain't Enough?
Well, when you have a series, it helps a lot because you can just spin off, take off, and I started it exactly where Payback But Your Life ended. So only difference I did, I moved it from Memphis to Detroit. So, that helped a lot being that it's a series. I was just able to spin off from the previous two books. So that's how I came up with Payback Ain't Enough.
Okay. And you introduced some new characters in this one, though.
Yeah, I had to because Mr. Forever, what happened to him. The two ladies, they wasn't finished doing what they were doing in the previous book, Sharia and Mia. And, Sharia needed help doing what she needed to do, so that's where Dark was introduced. But everyone else is basically the same. Janae is from the previous books. Brigand, Shan, of course, Big Chopper, all of those are from the previous two books.
Have you ever been to Detroit, Wahida?
Yes, ma'am. And I was locked up with the Detroit women. Actually, they were some of the most realest women that I was been around. They left a huge impression on me. The women of Detroit.
I'm from Detroit, and so when I
read
that, I said, "Well, I'm so glad I moved away from there 30 years."
Wow.
And I've heard how rough it is, and then recently there was
Detroit,
a murder.
Yeah, Detroit, the ladies and men, they ain't no joke.
Detroit has always been, it used to be the murder capital, and I know they have Flint there, and that's where Ashley and Jaquavis are from, so.
Yes, I love Ashley and Jaquavis. I call them my little youngins.
What do you think about street fiction, and where do you see it going? Since you're a publisher and you kind of you're privy to the numbers from the Nielsen reports, and what do you think?
That's a good question. To me, street lit is just like hip hop. And when hip hop first came on the scene, everyone was like, "Oh my gosh, what is this stuff? It's just a fad. It's not going to be around." But look what hip-hop has done, has created millionaires, multi-millionaires, and it's still here and it's going strong. And that's why I see street lit going. Hip-hop is the art of storytelling. They rap about what they experience and, tell stories about it. And the street lit authors, we write about, what we lived, what we experienced. So they go hand in hand. Hip-hop and street lit, to me, is one and the same.
And it was as though it was taken from nothing. When you think of hip hop, they use their mouth as a bebop, their words, mm-hmm. and rhythm, and sound, and that's how they made their music from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They took something from nothing.
Mean.
And many of the books, some of the top leading books like Shannon Holmes, and mm-hmm. the different ones, they were in prison when they wrote their books. So,
yes, it, ma'am. Donald Goins was in prison when he wrote his books, remember?
Yeah. So
yeah.
It's really, to me, it says a lot about the human spirit, that regardless of people being locked up, sort of like John when he was in prison when he wrote Revelations and the different books, the last books in the Bible, it's the same thing, that it was a calling, and I think that was your destiny. Had you not been in prison, as you say, you might not have found your calling for writing, because I do believe it's a calling.
I know I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have. That's just something else. I mean, I didn't know I could write a book, and it's crazy, because once I said, okay, I'm going to write a book, I just started writing. And then I couldn't stop writing. That's how I ended up getting two books, Thugs and the Women Who Love Them and Every Thug Needs a Lady, because Carl Weber, he was the one who first published me. He said, Wahida, this book is too big. You're going to have to chop this down. I said, chop it down? You crazy. I need everything in there. So then we said we're going to make two books, part one and part two, and that's how I ended up being the first street lit author to do a series, to have a part one and a part two. That was
Carl.
A genius of Carl. Yep.
Yeah, he told me, we were talking about a year ago, and he said, in fact, I discovered Wahida. And you know,
yes,
so now you're confirming that. You know, I never asked you. Or...
Yes, he did. I was in my cell one night. It was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was up reading Married Men, because I love his book. And after the last page, I slammed the book. I was like, oh, my gosh, this book is so good. And something said, get your pen and paper. So I got my pen and paper, and I wrote him a letter. I said, call, because I had a habit of reading the acknowledgments in, you know, every book that I was reading, and I would always see his name. So I said, I'm going to write this guy and see if he'll write me back. So I wrote him. I said, call, you know, I just wrote my first book. I'm still unsure of what to title it, and I'm investigating print-on-demand companies. Do you have any suggestions for me? And he wrote me back. He said he just started a publishing company for me to send him my book. So I had to call home and tell my people to hurry up, type it up, and send it to him. And as soon as he got it, you know, he offered me a contract.
That's something.
Ain't that
so
crazy?
Yeah, but that's how things happen. I look mm-hmm. at how I met you through Sheila. She met you at the conference. And I end up contacting you and end up getting the book deal for Sheila. And
wow.
So it just worked out. And then got to work on a couple of the books from your company. And so
mm-hmm.
the rest of history. Mm-hmm. And got to work on
And look, and that's how I started my young adult line. I was walking through BEA, and a young lady, she saw my tag. She said, you're Wahida Clark? So I said, yes, ma'am. She said, oh, my gosh. She said, you need to call this person, KC Boy. And she said, she's, you know, with the Chicago school system, yada, 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 yada. So I got in touch with her, and you know, she said, you need to do it. We need young adult books for our children. So that's what made me start the young adult line. Mm. She was instrumental in me starting it.
Okay, we definitely, there's definitely a shortage of African-American young adult fiction. And
isn't that something?
Because when you look at... this one, the Hunger Games, that's a young adult
mm-hmm.
fiction, and then it became a movie and have African American character in it. So
yes, ma'am.
You never know where a young adult fiction, because a lot of them have metaphors and themes that adults can relate to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think a lot of our kids, we hated books, or a lot of black young. What I hated, even though I was a reader from childhood, was that the books weren't relevant to us. They didn't relate to anything that we that was in our whole frame of reference. We had nothing that we could see, and I always laughed. Toni Morrison captured it in the opening of The Bluest Eye, where she has,
mm-hmm.
this is the dad, or this is the father, this is the mother. You know, the type of books we read
mm-hmm.
were C. Tom mm-hmm. Rowland, and not nothing to do
mm-hmm.
with us. Some of us never had seen a father. Didn't know what it was.
Absolutely. And that's why when I was in junior high school, my mom, she used to have on her headboard was a bookshelf. And she used to have Donald Goin books, Iceberg Slim books, and we was in the seventh grade. And on all, before my girlfriend, they would come pick me up, and my mom, she'd be in there asleep. I used to sneak in there and take her books, the Donald Goin books and Iceberg Slim books, off her bookshelf. We used to sneak them, put them in my book bag. We used to take them to school and read them in school, in class, because we didn't have any books.
Right. You didn't have any black history that was relevant, and then you didn't
have
any literature.
That's right.
And, you know, the thing I admire about the young writers, the ones I see that are even on Facebook and don't even have a website, that they're doing, like Malcolm X, by any means necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're
putting
books out there, and the e-books sometimes, they're becoming bestsellers with the $2.99 or 99-cent e-books. You know?
Right.
Writers are really more determined to take control of their careers now. And when they came to you and asked you, who was the first writer that you published? You know, what kind of inspired you to start your publishing company?
Well, while I was incarcerated, you know, I had hit the Essence magazine bestsellers list. My book was floating. Like I said, I was marketing and promoting my stuff behind the wall. So my books were going throughout the prison system heavily. So other authors who were also incarcerated, you know, I guess they're saying, well, hey, I can do that too. So they start writing me, sending me letters and manuscripts saying, check my stuff out. I want to get published. I want to do what you did. And my first author was Cash. He had a book that he had published on print on demand, Trust No Man. So I had wrote him. I said, oh, I like that book. But, you know, the beginning, you need to chop that beginning. You know, I started giving him feedback. And I told him I was going to start my own publishing company. So he said, well, when you start your own publishing company, I want to be your first author. And when I came home, he waited for me to come home. He waited for me to get situated, waited for me to get it up and running. And he ended up being my first author and one of my best sellers. He has Trust No Man Part 1, Trust No Man Part 2, Bonded by Blood, Trust No Man 3 comes out the end of the year. And he's incarcerated.
Mm. Oh, yep. Nude Awakening. Is he incarcerated or is he out?
Yes, yes. Victor Martin, I published for him Game of Deception and Nude Awakening. He still has about 7 more years to go. He's in North Carolina doing time.
Well, that's really good. I know.
Actually, 80% of my authors are incarcerated. The brother who wrote Licking License 1 and 2, he's incarcerated. Mike Sanders, he's home now. He wrote Thirsty 1 and 2. He's home. But Cash is incarcerated. Victor Martin, Intelligent Allah, Rashawn Hughes, Anthony Fields, who wrote Ultimate Sacrifice 1, Ultimate Sacrifice 2. Yeah, just about 80% of my authors are incarcerated.
Well, I call that the prison ministry. I have some writers that I edit that are in prison, and at first I said, I'm not taking on the prison ministry. I got enough. You know, because this is a second career. I'm retired. I said, you know, all I'm going to do is write my own books. I end up working on everybody else's books. And
yes,
I say I'm like Babyface. I can do better on other people's books than my own, but that's okay.
Wow. You're the second person I heard say that.
Yeah. Say, but, you know,
hey, that must be your gift.
Yeah, but it's fun because one guy came on my show, and he had been in prison. He said, oh, I can't believe I'm on Dr. Thompson's show. I used to read your name in all the books in prison.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, so many of the street fiction.
Came
you know,
full
I used to,
circle, huh?
Yeah, I worked for, when I used to do contract editing for Triple Crown, and, you know,
so
it adds up when you a lot of the books, and those books sell year after year after year.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, and Victor sent me his copy of the book that I had worked on, and you know, and I'm very and I
wonderful.
Thank you. Yes, his Nude Awakening, and so I was happy about that.
Very good, very good.
Yeah, and then I appreciate
they like Nude Awakening.
Yeah, it seems like it's getting good reviews too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then and I appreciate your acknowledgement for my work on. Payback ain't enough.
Man, you was a big help.
Okay. Okay, because it was you had a big cast of characters, so you know.
Yes.
Yes. That you have to see who is the most important characters, and sometimes we have to combine characters. That's what a developmental editor does. You know, a copy editor can put your commas in, and they can put your and they can catch all your typos. I'll catch a lot, but that's not what I focus on. I focus on the story.
And you do a good job. You do a good job.
Well, thank you. It's I've gotten better as the years have gone by.
Good
I'm sitting study on the craft. I spend a part of each day just studying the craft. I don't just write. You know, I'm a writer myself, and what I learn as an editor is I teach someone else, someone teaches me, and then I'm able to use it in my writing and into others. I have a book coming out at the end of the month, L.A. Blues 2, so I meant to mention it. I generally give out my titles.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Right, I want to, it's part of my series. So, you know, the young people have encouraged me to do series. I have L.A. Blues, and I base it on just a fictional possible case I could have had when I was a social worker. Say that client might would be 35 now, and she becomes a police officer, and then she becomes a private investigator, because there's so much crime and so many storylines you can get here in L.A. from the news even. That's kind of where that came from. And then I had a lot of background in that myself, because I used to work with the police, and my husband was a police. And so it kind of,
I kind of know. Stories, huh?
Right. He was a Detroit police and a LAPD, and he was shot here in the LAPD and lived. So I have... I can pull stories some from my life, but it feels good when you're making up and creating, so I'm creating.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I can see how you say you started out with the stories, but then the stories start adding on their own. I can tell
you've
created a lot
of them. That's right. They take on a life of their own.
Well, in your case, for Detroit, when you did you have to go to Detroit to do any research for Payback Ain't Enough?
No, I told you I was locked up with a lot of the Detroit ladies. I only went to Detroit once.
Okay.
I had a book signing out there at the library. I stayed out there a couple of days, and I met up with a couple of ladies that I was locked up with.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, no.
The Detroit ladies. They memorable. Out of all of the women that I was locked up with, the Detroit and the Memphis ladies were the most memorable.
Okay, that's why your story was set in Memphis at one point, and you moved.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, see, nothing is ever lost on a writer. That's what I've always loved about writers, that you can remember, you can hear a story, you can twist it and put it in your imagination, give it a whole new twist, but you never lose it, and that's what a writer should do. What recommendations or advice do you give to aspiring writers, Wahida?
For fiction writers, I tell them to get a book that I use and that I love. It's called Immediate Fiction by Jerry Cleaver. That's number one. And number two is to become a student of your craft, study the craft, and be open to constructive criticism. Because some writers, they get their critique back and they don't want to hear it. They don't want to do any work to it. They think they're all right. And then when the book comes out, whack. They want to blame everybody else. But you always got to stay open to the constructive criticism.
Yes, and I think it's
that's
a thing.
That's my three things.
Okay, good, because you were definitely really easy to work with, and you took, as you say, 80% of the advice, and that's good. But it was still you. You never changed your voice. And it was just tying up holes in the story or loose ends, and then sometimes you came up with even better plot twists. I think that's what the developmental edit can do for a book. It'll make a person think of how can I rethink the dream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And make it better. That's the main key. Make it better.
Right, where they can't say, well, this happened over here and that didn't happen. You know, they catch your timeline and a lot of things. And the copy editor can catch inconsistencies, too. So it needs
all that. Absolutely, because I usually get a developmental editor. Then I have my family edits, then I have the publishing company go through it. I get several people on my projects.
That's good.
As many as time will allow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
And I go back and I rewrite and rewrite and rewrite.
Good. Yeah, writing is rewriting. I always say that when I teach classes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, for you, Wahida, what is the least favorite part of your being an author for you?
Can you believe writing that first draft? That first draft is always like giving birth to a baby. Oh, it's so hard to me. But after I get that first draft and I have something to work with, I have some clay that I can mold into that perfect shape. But that first draft, that's the worst part of being an author for me, getting that first draft done.
Do you outline? You know, there are two schools of thought. Some are for outlining and some are not. Do you outline or do you not?
I think maybe one or two of my books I actually did an outline for, but all the rest of them I just write. I just go for it.
I think the way you write is better in the sense of you're open to the muse and whatever kind of comes along versus a lot of times I think the outline is good just as a kind of a shape, but then you should not just be married to it.
Right.
Come away from it.
I think two of my books, I think Thug Matrimony, I had actually did an outline for Thug Matrimony, and it seems like one other book. I don't remember which one it was. I think it was one more. But definitely Thug Matrimony, I used to outline with everything else. Nope, I just went for what I knew.
Okay, well, let's talk about the word thug, because your titles are kind of in your face. When I think of thug, you know, I'm beginning to hear people give the word gangster a positive connotation now. And it's
what are they saying? What definition are they giving gangster? Tell me about that.
I heard a minister yesterday saying you need to be gangster up here in this church.
Wow.
So people are beginning to use it, and they'll say, oh, my grandmama was gangster, you know. So I think they're talking about people that are kind of in your face and up front, and it's something about you using thug in your titles that have made thug take on a kind of a positive connotation. It's not, you know, pejorative, but like thug used to make you think of a criminal.
Right.
Did you realize that when you were saying that? You were just, that was the title that came in your head? Because I really see people don't say thug. I mean, because even your title, listen to the title, the one you have, Thugs and the Women Who Love Them. It's like you've combined, saying the killer and the people who love them, but it's made it, love is always life-affirming. So it's made it not so bad.
And look, Thug Matrimony.
Yeah.
Thug Loving.
Maybe that's it, because when I first saw your titles a few years ago, I was like, huh. And I've read three or four, I've read a couple of the Thug titles, too. It just made me, I was saying, oh, I was kind of turned off by the title, you know, oh, no, that's too rough. But then when I read them and got to know the characters, and now I'm thinking about it, when I hear the term thug, now I don't see it as that makes you so tough. So I'm thinking you softened that name, that word. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a possibility, because everyone loves my thugs.
I know.
My readers love my thugs.
Well, it's like, it used to be those were the bad guys or the bad boys, but you know, women have always liked the bad boys.
Isn't that something?
Yes, but when you said that, the thugs, and I'm just even seeing how that name doesn't seem that bad. Well, you know, now this portion of your writing is that you write in a way that is very in your face and very, as I say, jaw-dropping, where people are just shocked. When you're writing some of this shocking material, do you say to yourself, oh, this is too, I shouldn't write this. This is too dirty or too grimy or too nasty?
Absolutely not. Because when I write, I want my reader to not be able to put the book down. I want them to can't stop turning the pages. So I do whatever it takes to get that effect. That's my goal. I don't want my readers to put my book down, and I want them to keep turning them pages until they are finished. Man. And I get letters and emails saying, oh, my gosh, my husband's so mad. I got your book last night. I'm up all night reading it. And the kids are running around, and I hear all types of stories because they can't. Yeah, they say I ain't cooked no dinner last night. I just don't want my readers to be able to put the book down. So I do. If I have to shock them, that's what I do.
So whenever you come to a point where you say that it might be too shocking, you just go on and do it anyway. You don't say, I've got to hold back.
There's no such thing as too shocking in my book. Not for Waeda Clark. No such thing. My readers like to be shocked. It wouldn't even be right if I didn't shock them.
That's what I think. That's what is your that makes you unique. Your unique selling point, as they call it, is that you write in such a way that's unpredictable. It's edgy and it's always over the top, and yet the people still feel real. They don't feel like cartoons. They feel like real people caught up in desperate, crazy situations.
You ain't lying. That's what a crazy situation.
But that's what pushes
some of the stuff
story.
That my characters. Yeah, when I think about some of the stuff that my characters go through, yes, you're right. You hit it right on the nose. That's what is some crazy situations.
Yeah, because Sean, she just really went crazy. I couldn't even believe some of the things she did.
I couldn't believe in myself neither. I couldn't believe in myself neither.
Because I was saying, oh, that shot. You know, we get hooked on them. I had read the other two books. And I had her in my mind as one type of person.
Right. She did a total 360, didn't she?
Oh, yes. And that's good because we are all unpredictable. We don't know
what we might do. That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Heda, do you have any films in the future for you?
Yes. Actually, we hope to have a meeting next Monday to finalize the stage play for Thugs and the Women Who Love Them, and Every Thug Needs a Lady. And plus, Birdman said he wants all 11 of my novels to get them to turn them into movies. So we're working on that as we speak.
Wonderful. Well, that would be great. You know, they'll be sitting at the movies, because I'm sick of the same movies, The Godfather, you know.
Which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, we all love those. And
yeah, it's, we have
American Gangster. But we need some,
right.
It's time
for
some new blood. Right, for younger.
I think I saw, I don't know if it was Quan or the Quavers. I saw one of their tweets. It was saying that the last real movie we had for us was New Jack City. That, you know, was hardcore for the streets. Was New Jack City. That was the last one we had.
Right.
And I thought about it. I was like, wow, you know what? That might be right.
Right. And Training Day just kind of showed you the people, the bad side of the law.
I love Training Day.
Oh, yes. And American Gangster. What I like is if you get some of these CDs, they have the director's cut. And it's very helpful for writers to listen to what the directors and screenwriters say about, like, Training Day, American Gangster. You can listen and you can learn a lot about how a story is put together and how they shoot the filming. And so that would be helpful, you know, particularly for new filmmakers. I would love to see this in film.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Okay, well, Heda, we're coming up on the top of the hour. I'd like you to give out your websites and also your contact information and where you're going to be tomorrow.
Sure. The website is www.wclarkpublishing.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Waeda Clark, Facebook, Waeda Clark's Real Readers, and, of course, Waeda Clark and Yaya Publications, Waeda Clark Presents Publishing. Tomorrow I'm going to be at the Subway in Brandon, Mississippi at 9:30. Then we're going to go to the Medgar Evers Library and then to the Books A Million on I-55 North. I'm here in Jackson, Mississippi right now.
Well,
and next Friday, for anybody from Trenton, I'll be downtown. I mean, sorry, this Saturday coming, downtown at Classics Bookstore in downtown Trenton.
Okay, so you're heading back home after you leave?
Yeah, I should be back home Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay, are you driving or flying?
No, we're flying. We're flying.
Okay, well, you can have a safe trip and continue success. I'm so proud of you. You're just doing a great job.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And a big shout out to all my readers and to Cash Money Content for letting me do me and for, you know, being behind me and, you know, continuing to make my dream possible.
Well, that's great. They are doing a good job bringing out some new writers, and they're really helping.
They are.
Get these,
yes, they are.
Books
they're
out
very
there.
Innovative, and they're opening new things.
Well, that's good, and you know that just shows that we have to think outside the box and do some
Absolutely.
Different things in this day and age
Absolutely.
Because of technology. We can't just use what worked 10 years ago.
That's right, absolutely, especially in the publishing industry.
And all of your books are in print, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, all of them, all 11. In print, in physical books and, you know, e-books. Uh-huh. And most of them are audio books as well.
Yes, I know. So I'm
everywhere.
On Amazon. So people can get your audio books. How much are the average audio books?
I'm everywhere. I think like $29.
Wow, that's expensive. Have you ever read from any of your audiobooks, or they get actors?
I have them. My daughter, she listened to them. She said they sound nice. Other people say, but I never had a chance to listen to them. I have a couple of them on audio. I never even popped them in and listened to them.
I wonder how they sound.
Isn't that something? My daughter said that they sound good, because especially Justify Myself, they did all this elaborate production and stuff. They really went all out. But I've never listened to them. I have them sitting on the bookshelf, but I never popped them in and listened to them. Isn't that something?
Well, you're busy. You're running a publishing company
full-time.
Oh,
my gosh. Right? That's an understatement. Busy is an understatement, Maxine.
No. Then you have, how many books do you write a year, one or two?
Oh, I just one. Just one for me.
Okay. Well,
this one, a couple of times I kicked in two, but these last couple of years, just one.
How about e-books? Have you done any e-books?
Yeah, all my books are in e-books, and all the ones under my publishing company are in e-books as well.
Okay, how about anthologies? You've done some anthologies too, right?
Me and Kiki Swenson, we have Sleeping with the Enemy, and then the anthology that I edited, What's Really Hood. That's five short stories with me, Sean Jihad Trump, LaShonda Teague, Victor L. Martin, and Bonta. Right.
Oh boy, well, stay busy. I say, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person to get it done, because
that's the truth. Because we'll make it happen,
and
right?
Talkers, and I'm
we'll
so
make
happy
it happen.
Right. You are a doer, and so continue doing what you're doing, because you're helping yourself, but you're also helping others, and it's really giving literacy a shot in the arm. It's giving people who would not read a book that they can read and relate to.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so keep up the good work. I'll be talking to you, Wahida, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on the show. You have a good evening.
And
thank
you. All right, you're welcome. Please return next week to the Dr. Thompson Show. Love you all.